Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Now, we have in studio Andy Dunn. Hello, sir.
Hello, Joe.
Great to have you with us. And also joining us from Pakistan, no less, Will Greenwood. Hello.
How are you, my friend?
Are you well?
I'm great, yeah, I'm great. I'm just up in the foothills of the Himalayas. Been away for 3 or 4 days, doing some hiking and some skiing, and come back Friday.
Wow. Do you just find day-to-day life is just that bit too boring, I suspect, for you?
I've got some nice friends, and we do some... I've got to the stage in my life, I'm not that old yet, but I listened to a speaker, a doctor speaking at a conference about 3 years ago, and he used a swear word and just said, he rearranged just do it into using a swear word in the middle. And just said life would be so much easier if you just said yes to things you'd really like to do but often say no to because you feel you shouldn't and it's the wrong thing to do and there's risk. And he just went, you know what, just get on with it. So having listened to him, it literally transformed. My wife thinks I've gone slightly mad, but I have had a lot of fun in the last 2 or 3 years. And I mean, next month I'm running across Costa Rica. That is for charity. So I like to try and get out and about and see some of the world when I can.
Wow. Meanwhile, Andy Dunn and I
have to go back to work.
On the treadmill here at work. So, we wanted to put you two together, obviously, because it is England-Ireland week, but also your former teammates, Andy. Tell me about Will Greenwood. He would talk you through games, I understand.
Yeah, Will would talk everyone through games, the referee, the opposition. But I was 23. When I went over...
to Quinns.
I signed up. I actually thought I'd be playing with Woody as captain, and Woody had gone to the 2003 World Cup as Irish captain, but retired, so he didn't come back to Quinns. I didn't know that when I signed. I like to think probably the club wasn't big enough for the two of us, so Woody retired. But when I got back, when I started in Quinns, Will wasn't there. He was busy winning a World Cup with Jason Leonard, who were the two Quinns players. But I don't know, will he remember this story, but it had a big influence on me, was around that time in Irish rugby, we obviously weren't winning Grand Slams, but we'd gone into a trend of winning Triple Crowns, which was big back then in Irish rugby, obviously not as big now. And when the lads would win a Triple Crown, they'd get a week off. And that was accepted and applauded, and it was fine, it was the culture. But when I went to Quinns, we played Bath on a Saturday afternoon. That morning, England had beaten Australia, and it was a bank holiday Monday. We came back into work on the Tuesday, and I was quite inspired by the idea of getting to play with the English World Cup winners at the time. But when I came into training early that morning, there was two people in training ahead of me. I thought it was Will and Jason Leonard, and they were tagged out 3 days after winning the World Cup, and they both said hello to me, knew my name, and I was a new player, and it had quite a profound effect on me at that stage in terms of what work ethic looks like. It didn't have a profound enough effect on me to actually really work as hard as they did, but I think in later life when I reflect on that, that was an amazing experience that morning coming in. I'm sure on the back of winning a World Cup, he doesn't remember it as clearly as I do, but it was something special.
I remember you and Keo rocking up. One of my favourite games ever was I think you may have put the try scoring passing. I think Keo might have scored it and you kicked the winner against, I mean, we beat Claremont, didn't we? They should have beaten us by 40 in the Challenge Cup final.
Anthony Flosh, yeah, who ran about 30 metres to kick someone in the head in the side of a ruck in injury time when we were 6 points down.
No, it wasn't Flosh, it was centre. Can't remember his name. Flosh. It wasn't. They had this centre. Had tape around his ears.
Yeah.
And he was a Claremont. He was a Claremont local, and he'd been there for years. And Leonard was cheating on our own line. And it was clear it was their penalty, which would then end the game because they were 6 points in front. They would kick the penalty, but Leonard was trying to stop anything but a try being scored. And this centre just came in, and I think I don't think he booed him. I think he punched him in the face like six times. got the pen. Gavin Duffy took the pen, didn't he? Booted 60 yards downfield. We ran an old-fashioned line-out play. It's probably world-class that we called it, the move. And Keogh gets round Rougerie and scores under the post. You kick the winner, and I'm going, did we just win that game? Because they were way better than us.
It was the only point scorer.
Simon Keogh, is it?
Simon Keogh scored the winning try. Gav Duffy got the first try. Paul Burke got the first few penalties in conversion. I got the last penalty in conversion. So only Irish scorers for Harlequins winning the Challenge Cup that day.
Very impressive. When you say, by the way, Will would talk you through games, so you're this young, flash, out half, a big deal going over there. Obviously, centres have that extra split second or two to observe what's going on. You're a bit more in the thick of it at times. So explain to me what Will Greenwood talking you through a game might look like or feel like, or your memories of that.
I think
I'm going to interrupt there. And go, Will Greenwood was talking to the game, going, "Donna, Donna, drift, because it's your tackle." Or "Donna, Donna, there's a try on. Give me the ball." Or "Donna, Donna, boot it, because we're in trouble." That was, but by that stage, you've got the absolute worst of me, the verbose English bloke who was by this stage 31 years old. Both his shoulders are dropping off. And I was literally just trying to survive. So talking people through the game just to try and make sure the ball either came near me if there was loads of space or came nowhere near my postcode if it was surrounded by wasps or tigers.
So self-preservation was his motivation. What was your experience of it, Andrew?
It was an extra pair of ears and eyes, you know, a channel wider. And certainly as a young fly half, I didn't have the presence of mind to run a game well enough. I was instinctive, and that had its benefits at times, but I didn't have the capacity to control a game like many good fly halves and international level fly halves could. So Will would effectively, the phrase I would use is, would tell the story of the game out loud as it was happening, which I think to maybe some of the Irish public, it looked like I had grown as a player and learned, where in fact I was making the right choices with a bit of help coming in my way. So it was being filtered in. And
Donna was the original Carlo Spencer. He was the original Freddie Michelat. Wasn't quite sure when to take the sensible option. So I was just the old sensible bloke. Like, you know, those two Muppets in Sesame Street up in the theatre. Just sort of guffawing along, saying, you know, and just trying to keep a rein on his free-flowing rugby spirit.
And did you enjoy having Statler and Waldorf outside you?
I did.
You suggest this helped you?
Well, yeah, and we had Jason inside me as a prop. I would often play on the bench at that stage. Yeah. And Jason would, and I'm not exaggerating now, would have donuts, jam donuts on the bench and a coffee. So I thought he was winding me up. The first time I was on the bench, youngest guy on the bench, got told what to do, and there was a kit man called Ratty, and Ratty was like, "You need to get Jace's donuts and coffee now. You're the youngest lad on the bench." And I thought they were winding me up, but no, sure enough, so there was a bakery near the stoop, so 6 jam donuts. I doubt he ate all 6. He probably got through 2 or 3 of them.
And you know what?
He was a pro.
He used to say it was carbo loading.
Yeah, yeah.
Quinn sounds like a hell of a time.
It was great. Oh, yeah. It was absolutely great fun back then, yeah.
Well, we'll have to, I know, Will, you were over in Galway with us a while back. We'll have to do a Quinn's reunion show, I think, by the sounds of this.
Yeah, that'd be fun. That would be fun.
So, Twickenham looms.
I was going to say the après-ski is just warming up over here, so we need to talk about England Ireland.
Okay, you're in a rush. Everyone's in a rush. Let's get down to it then. Ireland have named their team, if anybody didn't hear, and it's as it was, really. The only difference it's as was starting 15. So it's Larmour, Conway, Henshaw, Bundiaki, Jacob Stockdale on the other wing, Sexton and Murray. We have Keane Healy, Rob Herring, Tyke Furlong. We have Ian Henderson and James Ryan. And we have a back row of Peter O'Mahony, Josh van der Fleer and CJ Stander. The only change is that Caelan Doris, who obviously had to go off against Scotland injured, is on the bench at the expense of Max Deegan. So that's Ireland, as you were. We're feeling much better about life at the moment. Will, how are England feeling?
They'll be pretty good. There's a little bit of angst, or not angst, I'm trying to work out what the worst way to say it is. They feel that on the back of the World Cup and the performance in France, I think in camp, they feel a little bit cornered, and they feel a little bit like they've been turned on a little bit after two. You know, they lost the World Cup final, they lose in Paris, and everyone's on their case. I don't actually think everyone was on their case. I think they were pretty poor in the first 40 minutes in France, and if they're pretty poor, you know, commentators and spectators and even fans aren't going to say, "Oh, well played, lads, you were awesome, unlucky." It was there was an element of, I think, criticism of the side. I think some of it was justified. I said it in the papers back home. I think Eddie picked a team that made it. If Sean Edwards had decided to pick an England team for that game, that would have been the perfect England team he'd have picked to play. I know Macca was injured and no Billy, and then he played Courtney Laws at six, and he played Charlie Yules in the second row, Marler at one, and you just then lose an element of the ball playing balance. I know pack and forward are supposed to smash the heck out of people, but the modern forward can now handle and pass and offload. And I think that side was limited. It was powerful and strong, but limited in terms of its handling ability. And so Sean Edwards just let the dogs loose and said, "Young lads, young Frenchmen, this is a real opportunity in front of 90,000. Just get off the line and see what comes of it." And they took their chances. England had plenty of chances in the second half to win it. They coughed up a soft one when Dupont ran around the front and gave Olivon an inside ball, because that was the only time France went into England's half in the whole of the second half. Cruz gets held up. Mm. So they weren't awful, but they just had a really poor 40 minutes. Scotland, they just needed to win. It was a swimming pool. It was an absolute swimming pool. And they duffed Scotland up, and they did exactly that. They made a couple of errors second half, but they controlled the game. So now they get to play two home games at Twickenham. And I think Ireland are a great team now, a strong team, I should say, rather than a great team just yet. And got some real edge to them. But I've never been afraid to back against England. I thought they'd lose in France. But on this occasion, no way. I think they've got a couple of performances in them. I think they can turn Ireland and Wales over, win in Italy. And then all they need is France to slip up in Cardiff or Scotland, and England can still end up winning the championship.
Mm. Before you go, let me just shoot you a quick question or two on English selection and the balance in light of the Vunipola's situation. There's been much talk about the back row, obviously. So Ludlam, yeah. Underhill and Curry at eight. All this talk about the balance being off and Curry is not a specialist eight. Can you give us, in so much as you can without television pictures, but can you explain to us in any specifics how somebody like Curry at eight, who's not a specialist, and the back row balance generally is upsetting England or taken away from England?
I think the main problem came in Paris when, without being overly technical about it, Underhill was stacking down on the key scrums on the left-hand side of the scrum with Curry at eight, and Underhill wanted to go wide behind Marler's backside and drive through him there, and Curry was technically binding correct head between the two second rows. So the gap between Underhill and Curry was too wide. The ball kept bobbling out. And when Ludlam went on, the same thing happened. Whereas the right hip and the right knee of the left-hand side flanker is utterly critical in scrums. So if you've got two lads who are just a little bit unsure of what's going on, Dupont had a field there, nice loads, like the ball's out. But they couldn't get any platform. Any real control at the base, much, much better against Scotland. They didn't need a huge tweak, but I think it was underestimating the importance of control at the base of a scrum in a game that really, really hurt them. Tom Curry is an awesome rugby player. I just felt at the time, why go round pegs in square holes when you've got someone like Sam Simmons who's tearing up trees, but clearly when he was in camp a couple of years ago, he obviously didn't impress Eddie enough because he's got him nowhere near the squad.
Well, I just have a curiosity. If you were selector in chief for the current England setup, not necessarily for this Saturday against Ireland, but in general, what would be your selection for 10 and 12? Would it be status quo, George Ford and Farrell, or how do you think about that new kind of 10, two 10s playing in midfield together, yeah. Two distributors? Where are you on that?
Great. I mean, yeah, look, the best performance England have ever had in the semi-final of the bear with me on that, to go down. The volume's been turned up here. The best performance England have ever had in a, was Ford, Farrell, 10 and 12. I'm a big fan. Whatever Farrell's form's been like recently, he's just the bloke you don't drop. He's just a bloke I've won in a team. I think he's an incredible competitor. Goal kicker under pressure. Look, he made the odd error against France, but I want him in my team. So he's straight in. I'm tempted to stick with Ford Fowler and have Manu at 13. That would be probably where I would go for this one. With Bundyaki and Robbie Henshaw in the midfield, if Eddie goes Farrell 10, Tuolangi 12, Slade 13, I think he's worrying more about what Ireland are doing. And I just don't think Eddie's that kind of coach. I think for this one, he'll go, OK, you pick your monsters in midfield, and we're going to get some quick ball, we're going to play off the top, and I'm going to get my little 10, 12 runarounds going, and I'm going to try and rip you apart in some of the wider channels.
OK. Listen, you've been very good to take the call from Pakistan, no less. So we'll let you go. Thanks so much, Will.
No problem. Take care, boys. Cheers, Donna.
Cheers.
Will Greenwood there. Let me put that your question back to you then.
Mm. Yeah, in terms of the English setup, yeah, I would probably stick with the same. I just have a curiosity sometimes around Farrell as a 10 versus Farrell as a 12. And when you put Farrell in as a 10, you've did two options in centre with Slade and Tuolangi, and gives you something different to Ford, Farrell, Tuolangi, or you know.
Slade, if they were to play him, would be playing with 2 months out and no rugby. So that may sway it ever so slightly. I have heard the point made from various people of Farrell at 12 that they appreciate that second ball player in there, and Will talked about 10, 12 runarounds and let's tear teams apart. Physically though, you're asking Farrell to do a serious job there against some very big men. That's the worry or the concern.
Yeah, I think he's capable of it. I don't think this, and he's probably similar build to Sexton, about 6'1", kind of 13 stone maybe. He's bigger.
Is that big as an inside centre though?
Well, when you add the likes of Sexton's aggression and drive and Farrell's aggression and drive, very similar characters, that counts for a lot in that last millisecond before contact. They relish it and they drive into it as a tackler. They don't soak much, and sometimes it's to their own physical detriment. But I wouldn't be concerned about the physical toll on Farrell. I would be more concerned that you look at what someone like Slade can give to your overall attack. I'm a huge fan of how he plays. And I agree with Will. I wouldn't go into an England international with Farrell on the bench ever. I'd have him at 10 or 12. But if you want to include Slade and Tuolangi and Farrell, that to me, I would probably drop out George Ford in that trio. I think they're probably the three best overall rugby players. But nonetheless, Ford has I think deserves his time in there. He's come back. He's had a lot of criticism, but like Will mentioned, that New Zealand semi-final, that was a pretty phenomenal performance by Ford too. So, you know, they have a bit of an embarrassment of riches in midfield. It's just sometimes a conundrum. What is the best selection for the best, or the right day against Ireland or Scotland or France? So, yeah.
Andy Farrell went with the same 15. Not a huge surprise, as I mentioned at the top. Doris is in ahead of Deegan on the bench. What have you made of Ireland? Where are we? Do you like what you're seeing?
Yeah, very much. I think the Scotland game was just pragmatism, recovery, and a result was probably paramount to take pressure off Farrell. I think he was just smart and wise. So I'd be very reluctant to judge. I think we didn't see a particularly stylish performance, but we got a result against Scotland. What I saw against Wales was quite a change in terms of passing out of the tackle, stuff I've been harping on about for a couple of years in here.
You did cross my mind at certain points, I must say.
Yeah. You've also got an empowerment among the playing group to make more decisions. And I think towards the, you know, particularly that last year with Joe and risking a bit, a mixed metaphor here, but I'd read somewhere recently about a farmer doesn't blame the lettuce if the lettuce is off. It looks at the crop, everything that's around the lettuce to produce a good lettuce. I think where Schmidt got a little bit lost in that last year was he wasn't creating the conditions for the players to be optimal, and then similarly when the players were suboptimal was blaming the players, and it became this corrosive atmosphere. The walls were closing in on what was promising to be a potentially great team in the previous 2 to 3 seasons self-destructed. Yeah. And there's a definite difference in Farrell's approach to man management and similarly to group management and group dynamics. And I think you can very clearly see that on the field. Mm-hmm. Even in some of the selection has generally been on the safer side and the risk averse side compared to being really adventurous with selection, but something like the Larmer selection and Larmer's license to go and do rather silly things from deep, that wasn't on the script. It was just not available to Larmer. Firstly, because he wasn't selected, but secondly, if he was selected, that wasn't allowed. And yes. That is a difference. That is a bit of a, well, it's rather a significant shift in the mindset of very talented people who are out there. So that little bit of freedom showed, and I think it also showed in the atmosphere in the Aviva. I was at the game with my brother-in-law, and there was a hugely positive atmosphere. There was a willingness to support the team when they saw the team make an effort to play a bit of expansive rugby, and I think that's already won over the rugby public, at least, if not the entire public just yet. But yeah, I'd be very positive on the back of the Wales performance that our mentality is well suited to going to England as an underdog and picking off a result.
And do you have the confidence that going to England, where it will be very physical, very tough, fine margins, that sense of expression and the license to do something silly, will that be as transferable to the kind of powder keg of Twickenham?
Yeah, I think on the back of a bonus point win against Wales, that helps confidence within the group that it's not silliness, it's just a different relationship with risk than we've had previously. So in terms of the physicality we face, I think our front five are more than capable of overcoming the English front five. I do. I just think we've a special front five. My concern is still, even though they were brilliant against Wales, is our back row, but less concerned now when Vunipola is out of the equation.
A big difference, yeah, for sure. So, Bono and Paul O'Connell in this week.
Bono was in here?
Not quite in here.
Oh.
In the Irish camp.
Oh, sorry. I was like, Jesus.
Bono was in here. You know all about it, my friend.
Okay.
Bono was in with the team last night at Carlton House. Yeah, yeah. So there's good videos of him pretending to be Johnny Sexton's waiter.
Okay.
And he spoke to the team at length about his experiences and Irishness, actually. They've made Irishness a bit of a theme this week. And then Paul O'Connell's been in as well.
Yeah.
And what Stockdale said of O'Connell was, I don't know, the respect obviously everybody has for him. Andy Farrell said that over the week you could see boys gravitating towards him. But Stockdale said he's trying to get an idea of what the culture of the group is about. And anything he thinks we can do better, we're interested in.
As Paul was asking questions as opposed to giving a speech.
I presume he was there to observe, and then they'll pick his brain. What do you think? Yeah, we don't know exactly what capacity he was in there with. Like, I saw pictures of him talking to James Ryan and gesturing with his hands as if to show how he might go to catch a ball in a certain moment.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just a vibes man, and anyone have any questions, I'm Paul O'Connell, feel free to ask me. So I think they've had a really nice build-up in that sense. So that's what's been going on.
Yeah.
Bono, again, to confirm, was not in here.
Okay. Well, that sounds very much it's about the appropriate arousal levels, physical arousal levels going into this match.
Why would
match.
You use that word?
Well, I think...
You're an eloquent man.
There is over-arousal for these games, and it'll affect performance, so they get too emotional.
Sure.
And they've got to be careful. But,
the likes, if I was sitting about to play England and Bono came in and talked about his Irishness, you're probably going to get a hair standing on your neck and you're going to get a bit of a kick.
Yeah.
So you got to learn, and these lads know it, I'm sure, how to contain that. But I like the sound of it. It's also, I suppose, it adds a bit of energy to the camp. And I that can be difficult to measure in a data-driven professional sports world. But as a panacea to the few weeks that were going on in international games at the end of the Schmidt era, which didn't have that level of energy and enjoyment, I think it's a smart move again by Farrell. Yeah.
Prediction?
22-19 to Ireland.
Wow.
And by the way, I covered the 2018 Grand Slam over there and I got it exactly right. I said an 8-point win by Ireland. 8-10, I think I said. So
okay.
It was a 9-point win that day.
Last text in. Has Andy much Andy much experience of growing cabbage?
Lettuce. It was lettuce I was talking about.
Excuse me, sorry.
Well, my granddad, Christy Dunn, lived in Ballymun Avenue and they grew lots of vegetables out the back garden there. And then my dad had a little vegetable plot in the back garden, but neither of them were farmers.
Okay.
So I'll sit on the fence on the question, but I've more experience than your man thinks.
Yeah, Sodger man. Don't mind him.
Yeah, just because I'm a dub.
Listen, thanks so much. We must do that chat with Will Green, but I think in a bit more depth about the Quins days. Get Simon Keogh in here as well.
Yeah, it was great fun.
It sounded like it.
Yes. And a young Hugo Mania on that team as well.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez. Big characters in that team.
Yeah.
Big dressing room. Right. Well, I hope you're right in your prediction. Thanks so much. Good to see you.
Cheers, Joe.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.